We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Welcome on into the second half of Sports Talk. This April 11th, Thursday edition. Coming up at the first break, we're going to be talking to Joe Healy, college baseball writer for D1 Baseball. Big old series for the LSU Tigers, number 4 Tennessee in their sights, heading to Knoxville. Jay Johnson contemplated a late arrival, but is a creature of habit and decided the Tigers will be taking off early for Tennessee. We'll have Joe Healy on at 6:20 to talk about that big matchup. Tigers desperately needing a series win in the SEC. Hasn't occurred all season yet. Then in the 7 o'clock hour, definitely be getting into Pelicans basketball with Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast. Man, oh man, three games left in the season right now. They're in Sacramento this evening for a matchup of team they've beaten 4 times already this season. Will 5 times be the charm? We shall see. After the game in Sacramento, boom, they got to take a trip. Luckily, it won't be too far for them to Golden State. They got them on Friday, and then they wrap up the regular season Sunday at home against the LA Lakers. I cannot wait to see what that game is going to be like. ESPN, Charlie, I don't know if you've seen, has picked that game up. So that 2:30 tip-off Sunday against the Lake Show will be a nationally televised game. They are obviously seeing it's a pretty big matchup, pretty big game. It should be interesting to see if we get Anthony Davis, LeBron James taking on this Pelicans crew on Sunday.
Yeah, that's the other race that we're talking about as far as the top 3 seeds in the Western Conference. It's really interesting. The Nuggets took control of the 1 seed from the Timberwolves last night by beating them head-to-head in Denver. And now Minnesota and OKC, the 2 and the 3 seeds, are both 1 game back of Denver. The other kind of race we're watching outside of obviously the Pelicans and the Suns for that 6-7 spot is how the 8, 9, and 10 will shake out. Right now, Sacramento, they're 2 games back of the Pelicans at the 8 seed, but they're only a half game in front of the Lakers, who are at the 9 spot, and the Lakers at the 9 spot are only a half game ahead of the Warriors at the 10. So there's a lot of shaking out that things could happen here. I think that the Kings own the tiebreaker over the Lakers, so even if they do lose to the Pelicans tonight, I don't think that they would drop unless the Lakers, in fact, leapfrog them with a victory. I need to actually double check and see if the Lakers are playing tonight. So, yeah, that's a race to keep an eye on. They are not so... The Kings, even if they lose tonight, it's not the biggest thing in the world for them. They'll stay at the 8 seed. It's huge for the Pelicans, though.
Absolutely.
If they win, they keep the 6. If they lose, they drop into the 7. And then they need the Suns to lose one of those final couple games that they have left. So, yeah, looking at the West, the Wild Wild West, as we call it. So the Pelicans obviously need a win tonight to retain that 6 spot. And right now, Steve, if things were all to kind of stay as they are, they'd be matched up against the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first round. Pretty spicy, I would say.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And looking at the rest of the matchups too, the 4 and 5 seeds are set right now, correct? It's going to be Dallas.
Yeah, that's locked in.
Dallas and the Clippers. It's just depending on who's going to end up with the home court advantage there.
Someone had a really funny post on Twitter, and I don't remember who posted it, so I can't credit it. But they said that Luka versus the Clippers, it's already happened twice, so this will be the 3rd time in his young career that he's gone up against Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and the Clippers. And the first couple times, you know, like, it was always a tight series, and it went to a game 7, and Luka's supporting cast wasn't as good as it is this year.
Yeah.
And someone had posted this is going to be like Luka's Michael Jordan moment, where he finally gets over the Pistons. You know what I mean? So, but we'll see what happens there. It's going to be a really fun series. Obviously, the Clippers have great top-end talent. I think if you're looking at betting odds to win the Western Conference, it's the Nuggets and then the Clippers. But granted, as we mentioned, the Mavericks are white hot right now. 16 of their last 18 games won. They're climbing up the Western Conference standings like a rocket ship. 50-30 record now. They control that 5 seed. And whether it's home or away, that will be the first round matchup, the 4-5. The LA Clippers and the Dallas Mavericks. And Steve, I mean, the West has so many potential great matchups in the first round, and that's got to be one of the best.
Yeah, I was really surprised that the Phoenix Suns game, the matchup against the Clippers, was as competitive as it was, considering LA really didn't have any of their guys, their main guys, in the lineup. They were able to hang around for a while, but then it was just too much in the end, too much Phoenix in the end.
Yeah, Bones Highland, give him a shout out. He played his tail off last night for the Clippers at home. But as you can't overcome, you know, Kawhi Leonard sitting out, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Ivica Zubac, like all these guys. That's their entire starting lineup.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That was not playing, and they were all sitting out. I mean, for them, it's like you're looking more towards the playoffs than necessarily seeding or positioning or anything right now. And it was a back-to-back. It was more important for the Suns to win that game last night. And it really did come down to the fourth quarter. Like,
right.
The Clippers had that game.
I was surprised for sure.
So, unfortunate, but now the Pelicans, you need to take care of business. You didn't get the help that you were hoping you would get from the Clippers. At the same time, the Suns, you know, their final two games are against the Kings and then against the Minnesota Timberwolves, who could be fighting for that one seed. So it's not necessarily an easy route for Phoenix either, but if you're the Pelicans, you know, we've talked about it a little bit since they got all that help on Tuesday, their route is still clear. Their magic number is three games. Three wins get you into the postseason as the sixth seed. So go 3-0. Finish this five-game stretch with a 5-0 record after, you know, such a disappointing homestand where you go 1-5. If you pick up one of those games, you're in such a better position. But now there's no room for error. You can't rely on other teams to help you. Go 3-0 in this stretch. Beat Sacramento tonight. You got to take down a really hot Warriors squad tomorrow night, and Steve will talk about that when we get to it. But obviously, beating Sacramento, taking it game by game, and try and get to that sixth seed in the playoffs.
You mentioned the Minnesota Timberwolves there for a second, and they had some big news today. It came out that Karl-Anthony Towns expected to return to them on Friday, tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big addition. If you're looking at the Timberwolves, they're an interesting team because they are the number one defense in basketball. At the same time, they don't have, you know, Anthony Edwards is a superstar in the making, and I think he's already kind of arrived. Naz Reid has been awesome in replacement. Former LSU Tiger has been great in replacement for Karl-Anthony Towns. A former Pelican, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, has had his kind of bench role solidified for that team in his minutes and his shooting capabilities. It's a matter of where else does the scoring come in when it comes down to crunch time in the playoffs? Are you going to be over-reliant on a guy like Anthony Edwards? And I guess in a sense, you could kind of say the similar thing about the Pelicans, who have struggled in clutch times this season, where are you going to be over-reliant on Zion once playoff basketball comes around if the Pelicans do, in fact, get in? That's why getting Brandon Ingram back would be so huge, but we'll have to see, you know, when he plays. He's not going to be playing tonight. You know, it would be great news if he could possibly play tomorrow, and they're just resting him for the second night of a back-to-back. But we'll obviously have to see what happens there.
Yeah, well, when we get to Jake in the 7 o'clock hour, Jake Madison, the Locked On Pelicans podcast, see if he's heard any more updates on Brandon Ingram. Could we see him Friday in that second of a back-to-back in Golden State? When we get back from this break, though, we're going to get more into LSU baseball, who's taking a trip to Tennessee. Number 4 Vols hosting the Tigers will be a great matchup. College baseball writer for D1 Baseball, Joe Healy, joins us next right here on WWL. Stay tuned.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller along with Charlie Long here. Welcoming in now Joe Healy, D1 Baseball, college baseball writer, also SEC Extra on d1baseball.com. Joe, how you been, man?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me on again.
Always definitely appreciate your time, and we haven't really – our hands are hovering over the panic button with LSU baseball right now. Not ready to press it just yet, but obviously, man, oh, man, this is a monster series for this team at a tough Tennessee park where, you know, the ball loves to fly out of. LSU obviously has some pop in their lineup, but we just haven't seen enough consistency from this Tigers lineup, and even worse, their pitching has been letting them down lately, so – what are your initial impressions of this matchup going into the weekend?
Yeah, it's a tough matchup for what has ailed LSU so far to this point. I mean, we thought the pitching was going to be such a big part of what they were going to do to win games this year, and it just hasn't happened. I mean, there are success stories. Luke Holman has established himself as a real Friday guy. Griffin Herring has been a weapon in the bullpen, but there's not been enough of that. And so now you're going into a Tennessee, like you mentioned, ballpark that plays small. Tennessee loves playing there. Tennessee's hitting something like 330 in SEC play. They have 89 home runs already over the course of the season. It's just a really bad matchup for a team that's trying to find itself. And you're right that LSU's really backed up against the wall at this point. It's too early to totally, you know, say that this is going to be a lost season or that things have gotten away from them, but you got to at least win a game this weekend, because if you come back at 3-12, that probably is a little bit too much of a hole to dig out of if they're going to be a host team, an Omaha team, something like that. So this weekend's big, if for no other reason than, like, you just want to see LSU fight, because honestly, this isn't totally a talent issue. Are they as talented as last year? No, probably not, because, you know, you don't have Skeens, Cruz, et cetera. But this team is talented enough. They should have a better record in SEC play than 3-9. So you just like to see them kind of fight and show some of that so that it portends good things for the second half.
Joe, they've had some rough losses in SEC play, as you know, but they've also had some blowout losses. And, you know, I've kind of questioned the mental fortitude of the team. We talked with Kendall Rogers last night, the managing editor of D1 Baseball, and he kind of pointed to the fact that Jay had to take away cell phones at some point. It's just kind of a weird storyline that's been following this team, is that, you know, they'll lose like a really tough game two, and then they'll just get blown out and run ruled in game three to some teams. And that's kind of been the story of this LSU squad this year. But you have to flip the script at some point. And you're going to Tennessee, and we were talking last hour about this, Joe, and we mentioned, like, I would expect a lot of runs scored. I know that LSU's offense has been inconsistent, in being a nice word, but they still have pop in the bat. You look at Jared Jones, you look at Tommy White, you look at Hayden Travinsky. Now, Tennessee, like, as you mentioned, with their, they love hitting in that ballpark. They've got 89 home runs this season, which is tied with Georgia atop the SEC. LSU's got to match that. They got to match the offensive production, because the ball's going to fly out this weekend. And Jay kind of pointed out to limiting, you know, free bases so that those home runs that they do give up are solo shots instead of, you know, two-run, three-run bombs, even grand slams. So at the same time, if you're LSU's bats, getting walks, like having good at bats and getting on base to where their home runs, you know, fly out and score a couple extra runs. Joe, their hitting with runners in scoring positions has been bad, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But if you can earn some walks and get some home runs and get those extra runs against this Tennessee squad, I think it could serve them really well this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And because at times this season, they've done enough offensively, right? In two of the three games against Vanderbilt, you scored enough runs to where you feel like you at least had a chance to win the series. Now, in the finale of the Vanderbilt series, three runs and you get run ruled. That's not great. But you scored 10 runs in the first game, six in the second, and Vanderbilt got great pitching too. So, you know, you feel good about that, but you're right. It's been a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde deal. I was there for the Arkansas series, and those three games were really close. Like, that might be as close as anybody's played Arkansas yet this season in a three-game series in terms of the score lines, but you just didn't get anything out of it. So, you know, they show up sometimes, but it's just not enough against Arkansas, and they have other series where, man, they probably should have, you know, probably should have won the series at State, for example, at least on paper. But they just did a couple games. They just didn't seem to show up like you would expect them to. So it has been a little bit strange, but I think your hunch is right, where you're going to have to win some ugly games this weekend. Like, you're not, you know, unless Luke Holman just pitches out of his absolute mind, which is possible, but I'm guessing, you know, against that offense, it's going to be tough to do. You're going to have to be able to win a 10-8 game. And the key to that, as you alluded to, is don't make errors. Don't give up free bases. Make them basically hit seven solo home runs a game to beat you. And, you know, look, Tennessee might do that, but at least that's, you know, you're just getting beat by better players and not giving it to them.
So then I guess that's my question for you, Joe, is what is the X factor for LSU on the mound this weekend? They already announced that Luke Holman's going to be throwing game two and that Gage Jump will be throwing game one. So they kind of changed things up a little bit from what it was in the past weekends. Gage Jump, who's typically been their Saturday guy, will be in fact going tomorrow night, and they're saving Holman for that game two start. I think you're looking at, you know, potentially Jump getting off to a good start for the Tigers and then Holman as well. And then game three, if someone can step up, if either one of those two games are lost, I mean, worst case scenario is that they drop both of them. I mean, who are you looking to step up on the mound? We talked about Thatcher Hurd, and he's a name that he was so great in the Omaha run last year, but this year he's been pretty poor at times. He's had some bad luck as well. But that's a name that really needs to solidify that third starting spot for this Tiger bunch to really be legit.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think we have to acknowledge that, you know, maybe the run in Omaha, as talented as Thatcher Hurd is, maybe the run in Omaha is the outlier, as opposed to maybe that being a sign of things to come. But he's talented enough, like, he's going to have to play a role on this team if LSU is going to have any kind of shot to do some of the stuff that it wanted to do before the season, challenging to get to Omaha, all that stuff. Like, he's going to have a role. And that was kind of the case last year, and he figured it out. So I get that. Jump is also key for me because he's been pretty good this year. Now, the numbers aren't as good in SEC play, but that's true for most pitchers. The thing is, though, he still isn't getting deep into games. And I think some of that early on this season was – just trying to be a little extra careful with him because he hadn't thrown in a real game in a long time. So just being a little bit extra careful. Now, though, I think we're at the point where you're going to need him, especially given the struggles of this team. I mean, he's got 8 appearances and has 31 and two-thirds innings. I'm not a math major, but that's less than 4 innings per appearance. At some point, you've got to try to get 5 or 6 out of him because the reality is he's one of your best arms. So it might be 6 innings, 4 earned runs, and that might just have to be okay. And you just hope you get enough offense. But to me, that, not to put it on him because he's pitching pretty well, but when you're only getting 3 2/3, 4 1/3 innings out of a starting pitcher, now you're going to the bullpen really early. And as much trouble as they've had, you know, cycling through, you know, Justin Lohr and Christian Little and Javon Coleman and, you know, all these guys to try to find somebody other than Griffin Herring to get big outs, they're exposing a lot of relievers to a lot of innings where they're just kind of getting pounded. So it feels like they need someone other than Luke Holman to give them some length. So I actually look at Gage Jump as a guy that I'm looking to, if I'm Jay Johnson, say, hey, look, we just need a little more from you right now.
Joe, looking at the pitching situation for Tennessee, their game one, like Charlie just mentioned, is still TBA right now. I know that A.J. Russell has remained sidelined, got some forearm soreness for the Vols. Any expectations from you on who Tennessee could end up tossing game one tomorrow?
I think it's going to be a staff day regardless. I think who starts that game isn't as important as what they're able to, how many outs they're able to get from guys so that they can save bullpen for the rest of the weekend.
Gotcha,
I would not be surprised if we see a lot of Nate Sneed, who is kind of their long reliever. You know, they've been using him in a piggyback role. Now, the tricky part about that is, you know, they've been using him as a piggyback on Xander Seacrest, who is in the rotation this weekend. So if you want to move Sneed to being able to use him in long relief to open the series, you're going to lose him potentially to back up Seacrest, who also isn't a guy who's going to get deep in the game. And that's where, for Tennessee, A.J. Causey really hitting the skids. I think his ERA is over 10 in SEC play now. He was really good early in the season, but it has not been good the last few weeks. And so him struggling the way he is, where they have to pull him from the rotation, has knock-on effects now. Because you can't just bank on, hey, let's use Nate Sneed, who's our best arm in the bullpen. Let's wait and use him after Seacrest, and we can maybe get four out of one and 4 out of the other, and we've covered most of the game. So I think it'll just be a staff day, but don't be shocked if you see Nate Sneed come out early in the game, and they're just going to leave him in there basically until the pitch count just gets too high.
Joe, looking at this Tennessee offense, obviously Blake Burke stands out with hitting .410 this season. I mean, we talked with you, I think, before the season started about Billy Amick, the transfer from Clemson, the third baseman. He's actually missed a couple weeks in a row with an appendix injury. And I think that the latest report from Coach Vitello is that he could be back this weekend, but the biggest thing is him playing defense. He may be used in a potentially a DH role, but he's also hitting great this season. I mean, this Tennessee team, their numbers offensively just jump off the page to you. They're 338, number one in the SEC. They have 94 doubles, 3 triples, 89 home runs. Once again, as I mentioned earlier, they're tied with Georgia first in the league in homers. So, I mean, this offense, like we talked about, LSU needs to match it because they're going to have to win some types of 9-7, 10-8 games this weekend.
Yeah, it's kind of insane on a number of levels. Consider the following. You know, this team is hitting, like you said, 338 overall, hitting 331 in conference, which is, to be hitting 331 against SEC pitching, regardless of who you played, is really impressive stuff. But consider they are doing it, like you mentioned, last couple weeks without Billy Amick. Cannon Peebles, who came in as a transfer from NC State, who everybody thought, okay, this is a guy. He's going to hit third for him. He's going to catch every day. Like, that really hasn't worked out. I mean, he's hitting close to 100 in SEC play, has really kind of lost the starting catching job at this point. So those two things don't go the way they expect. And yet, here they are, where they are hitting as well as we could have expected, probably actually better. And they have probably 13 or 14 guys they trust on the position player side. They honestly don't have enough at-bats to go around. I mean, they've got Ariel Antigua, who's a middle infielder, who was one of their highly ranked recruits coming into the year, who just – he got hurt to start the year, and he just hasn't been able to get in the lineup, right? I mean, that's just one example. It's 1 through 9. It's a tough order. There's no breaks in it. You know, I could just kind of go on and on about the impressive stuff that we've seen from Tennessee. And – you know, this team could be a juggernaut if they could figure the pitching out, and that's really been the question so far for them.
Joe, just curious if the Tiger team can end up pulling out a 2-game or even a, you know, be great if they pull a sweep off in Tennessee. Is there still that, you know, long shot of LSU being able to be a host come regionals?
Oh, sure. I mean, when you consider that, you know, look at what Auburn did last year. Now, Auburn wasn't in quite as much of a hole as LSU is now. I think their bottom was 5-10 in the SEC, but they ended up hosting, right? So they're only, LSU's only a couple wins off that pace. So yeah, I mean, when teams that finish 16-14 in SEC play regularly host. And so look, that means you're going to have to get going pretty quick here. I mean, that's what, 13-5 down the stretch. I mean, that's tough, but like, could they do that? Sure. They're talented enough to do it. So I never say never on that, but you have to get a result this weekend. It feels like, I mean, you can't be looking at, you know, 4-11 probably and feel real good about that happening. But look, you know, the beauty and the downside of the SEC is, you know, you're going to play a lot of good teams. That's going to give you a lot of chances to win big games. It's going to keep your RPI high. So it's just all about, can you win enough SEC games?
And then, Joe, looking at LSU's hitting issues this year, a lot of them can be tied to their hitting with runners in scoring position. Against Mississippi State, they were 3 of 24. Against Florida, they were 6 of 28. Against Arkansas, 4 of 18. And Vanderbilt, 7 of 31. In total in SEC play, 101 at-bats with runners in scoring position, 20 hits. They're hitting 198. I mean, how difficult is it for them to turn that stat around? Because obviously that's so crucial, especially against SEC pitching. When your pitching staff has been getting shelled at times, you got to be able to match the intensity of an opposing offense. And LSU this year, I mean, you can point to that number by itself, Joe, 198 with runners in scoring position as a reason for that 3-9 start in SEC play.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, yeah, it's going to be tough to do a whole lot when you're hitting under 200, you know, in that situation. And I think it speaks less to the fact that this team's not coming through in the clutch. Oh, that's true. But I think it speaks more to, at any given time, there have only been two or three guys who have been swinging it really well. You know, there were times when Tommy White wasn't swinging it well, then he gets going. Steven Milam was hot early in the season, not so much now. Jared Jones has had some ups and downs. Michael Braswell is leading the team in average right now at SEC play, which I don't think any of us saw coming. So when you only have two or three guys going good at one time, you know, those couple guys get on in the order, and then the lineup turns over to guys who aren't swinging it very well. And so when your lineup's not very deep, and you've got guys who are kind of struggling all at the same time, just ask Florida. They're kind of in the same position right now. You end up in these situations where it seems like every time you have something good going, here comes some guy who's 4 for his last 24. And that's kind of how those things happen. So I think it's less that the guys are gripping a little bit and pressing, although that could be part of it. I think it's just more to do with the fact that the lineup just doesn't have the length it had last year.
Joe, who do you see as the top, I would say, five teams, I guess, in the SEC right now? Obviously, Arkansas and Kentucky, both 11-1 in conference play. I think the Hogs are clearly, you know, the cream of the crop right there. Are you a believer in this Kentucky team?
Yeah, I am. So, because here's what's different about them. I mean, one is that last year they did a lot of small ball, and that was kind of their identity. Well, this year they're a team that can do that, but they don't necessarily have to. Now, they're not hitting a lot of home runs still, but they play in a big ballpark, but they're barreling the ball. I mean, their batting averages are high. Like, I've watched them play quite a bit. Like, they're making solid contact. It's just not home run contact. They're more physical this year than they were last year. They've also got some stuff in the bullpen they didn't have last year. Like last year, you know, there's a lot of pitchability stuff for Kentucky's pitching staff. This year's a little bit different where, look, I mean, they're not Vanderbilt running out there with that quality of arms, but they do have more than they've had. So I am a believer. Now, am I going to bet on them winning the SEC? No, but I do think this is real and not just like some sort of schedule or luck-based mirage. As far as a pecking order, honestly, it's Arkansas 1, Gap, Texas A&M 2, and then a Gap. And then you throw in Vanderbilt, Tennessee, and then whoever you think is the next best team, which that's where it gets kind of ugly, because for that fifth spot, we're talking about a Florida team that's kind of fighting it right now, Mississippi State team that's been pretty good, but they're still, you know, I'm still not sure how much I want to buy into that. So I feel good about that top four plus Kentucky, of course, so that's the five. Once we get past those five to the sixth spot, that's where I really start to look at and really not have any clear vision of who that team is.
Yeah, you mentioned Florida, Joe. That's a team that I think I'm out on right now, at least. And I think a lot of people kind of are, too. Getting swept against Missouri was one thing, but then going on the road to Florida State and getting embarrassed the way they did in the midweek. And they've lost a lot of midweek games, Joe. But, I mean, going against an in-state rival like FSU and the showing that they had, like their pitching staff just getting lit up, guy after guy that Sully just threw out there, it just wasn't a good showing. And this was a, you know, Florida team that just a couple weeks ago came into Baton Rouge and took 2 or 3 from LSU. And I think we were all pretty high on them at that point, but now they've fallen to 6-6 in conference play after that kind of embarrassing sweep against Missouri, who LSU is going to, in fact, see next week after this series against, obviously, Tennessee. So Florida's fall from grace, I guess, has been pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. I mean, the issue that we knew they were going to have is they're young on the mound. Now, they're extremely talented on the mound, but they're extremely young, and that's come back to bite them, and that's a big reason why the midweek games have been such a problem, because it's a lot of freshmen on Tuesdays. And when you're playing a good Florida State team, that's going to happen, but they've also got losses to UCF and Stetson and, you know, North Florida. Like, so that's not great. What they did over the weekend against Missouri was kind of new because they had been winning their series. But last weekend was a little bit different, and I can point to the fact they're hitting .232 in conference play, and then I'll quickly run through, like, you know, Colby Shelton's hitting .224 in conference, Cade Curlin .224, Dale Thomas .185, Luke Heyman .152. Like, those are guys, they're expected to be kind of right in the middle of everything, and they're just not swinging it well right now, and it feels a little like, if Jack Caglione doesn't go, you know, supernova in a game offensively, they're kind of stuck in neutral. I mean, I was at that Missouri series last weekend, and they just exploited holes in their swings. I mean, Missouri doesn't have big-time stuff on the mound, but they pitched it well. They clearly had a pretty clear scouting report on how they were going to pitch Florida, and they just executed it. And Florida didn't have a lot of adjustments. They didn't really have a lot of approach at the plate. It was a lot of grip and rip. And so it was a lot of strikeouts and a lot of ground balls and a lot of weak fly balls. And it just looked really ugly for Florida. And it kind of feels like a team that just kind of needs, much like LSU, it feels like part of this is also just kind of the mental hurdle of, like, man, we're really losing games here that we did not expect to lose, and having to reset from that.
And then looking at this weekend, Joe, we already have Mizzou at Georgia started, and Kentucky at Auburn has also started so far. But this weekend's, like, slate, I guess you would say, of SEC games, the biggest one for me, obviously Vanderbilt at Texas A&M just stands out like a sore thumb, as far as also Arkansas and Alabama. What do you think about this weekend in conference play?
Yeah, the Texas A&M Vanderbilt is obviously the big one, like you mentioned. And I'm kind of fascinated by, you know, Vanderbilt. A lot of people jumped off the bandwagon, kind of myself included, after they got swept by South Carolina a few weekends ago. But since then, they've been really good. And it seems like they're figuring things out on the mound. Carter Holton continues to kind of be quietly excellent. His ERA is right about 2 in SEC play. Bryce Cunningham and Grayson Carter, while not perfect, are better pitchers than they have been in the past. And those are two massive, massive arms. Freshman Ethan McIlvain, who did not get off to a great start, has started to figure it out. He's a real weapon in the bullpen now. Seems like things there are coming together. And look, the offense is not the most physical offense in the SEC, and that's an understatement. But they are swinging it well in terms of batting average. They're making contact. They're getting on base. They're athletic. But the pitching is going to be where it's at, and it's a tough, tough task. It's A&M's lineup is not quite Tennessee's lineup. It doesn't have that much depth, but the top three of Braden Montgomery, Jace LaViolette, Gavin Gerhovac, that's about as good a 1-2-3 as you're going to have in college baseball. So how well the Vanderbilt pitching staff on the road deals with the top of the A&M lineup feels like the key matchup there in that series.
Joe, awesome stuff as always. Appreciate your time and have a great one.
Hey, thanks. You too, fellas.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Healy, college baseball writer for D1Baseball.com. Also, SEC Extra on D1Baseball.com. Definitely go check out his work there.
The D1
always
baseball
great info.
Guys rock,
they
Steve.
Are right.
They're the
great
best.
Lineup. No questions about their lineup.
Yeah, Kendall, Mark, Joe, every time we get them on, they're just encyclopedias of information in college baseball.
Taking a break. We'll be right back with more sports talk right after this here on WWL. Welcome back into sports talk. Getting ready for the Pelicans. Have a 9 o'clock start against the Sacramento Kings this evening in Sacramento. Kings have lost 4 this season to the Pellies, and yet they're favored by 1.5 tonight. I'm surprised by that. I think they were favored in all the matchups previously.
I don't know if all the matchups necessarily, but definitely tonight. I mean, that's a little bit surprising to me because the Kings haven't been playing great basketball, Steve. They've lost 5 of their last 8.
Right.
And they've kind of cemented themselves in the play-in tournament. Like, that's not a team that I'm worried about if you're the Pelicans as far as chasing you down for the 6th seed, but you still need to beat them. You need to beat the Kings and then root for the Kings. It's kind of funny because the Kings play the Phoenix Suns tomorrow night. So,
our enemies become friends.
It could actually be devastating with the Kings. If the Kings were to take one from the Pels and then lose to Phoenix, that would be really rough. But obviously, you got to beat them tonight, step 1, and then root for them tomorrow.
Looking at the rest of the action going on in the NBA, we like to do this, who to root against. There's really nobody else playing this evening that counts against the Pels. You could look at the Golden State-Portland game. That's a 9 o'clock start, but really has nothing to do with how New Orleans standings will end up faring in the end.
Maybe you could root for Portland there, but at the same time, I don't want Golden State being annoyed tomorrow
aggravated.
Night. Yeah, what you're rooting for with that game, Steve, is a 3 overtime game. You hope that Scoot Henderson and DeAndre Ayton can have like a big-time showing like they almost tried to do against the Pelicans and push the Warriors to have their star players like Steph Curry play 48 minutes or something like that, like have it go double OT, triple OT. Obviously, I'm just daydreaming. It's not going to happen. Golden State's going to blow this team out there. 13.5-point favorites on the road against Portland. But with a back-to-back, if Portland can keep it close and force those star players for Golden State to play a lot of minutes, that could be something to keep an eye on. Similar, obviously, the Pelicans and the Kings tonight, they have a back-to-back when they play Golden State tomorrow. So if the Pelicans can get out to a good start, we talked with Nick Friedell in the 5 o'clock hour, and he mentioned, you know, the Pelicans have the mental edge over Sacramento because they've beaten them 4 times this year. If you get out to a really strong start in Sacramento, that's so key because you can just keep pushing it and allow your star players to get some rest for that huge game tomorrow night in Golden State.
Yeah, I was actually curious to see, wonder if the Warriors would be resting anybody tonight, but I don't think they're in any position to really take a game off at this point.
No, I don't think so. And so both the Warriors and the Pelicans, just to reemphasize, are looking for the same thing here. Obviously a victory, but a fast start. That's what you want to see from the Pels tonight. And also someone had texted in and asked us about the injuries for the Pelicans.
Right.
And one player is, in fact, out tonight via personal issues. Larry Nance Jr. is not going to be playing this game. So I don't know exactly how that will adjust the rotation. Obviously, Jonas Valanciunas hasn't been playing many minutes.
I was going to say, more minutes for Jonas then.
More minutes for Jonas. Probably, you know, maybe they go back to that small ball lineup that they've been using pretty recently where they played Dyson a little bit at the five. I mean, it's where Zion is effectively the five, but Dyson's just thrown all over the court defensively. So that could be something to keep an eye on as well. Obviously, Najee Marshall is questionable tonight, and then Brandon Ingram has been ruled out as well for this game against the Kings.
Yeah, Najee being upgraded, good to we'll see if he can get back in the lineup for them, giving you, obviously, another depth off the bench for the Pels. And man, oh, man, I know a lot of people have talked about it, especially Willie Green and the players, that they feel that this might be the best bench in the NBA.
Yeah, with Jose Alvarado healthy, it is, but or at least among them. But with Larry Nance out, that's kind of a little suspect, because do you have Jeremiah Robinson-Earl minutes tonight, potentially? I think that would maybe be a good sign for the Pelicans because it means that they're playing a good game. Larry Nance has picked up a lot of minutes for the Pels recently because, you know, they've limited Jonas's minutes. But against a guy like Domantas Sabonis and the Kings and how they match up together, yeah, I would expect maybe Jonas to pick up some more minutes with the absence of Larry Nance.
Well, look at that Sacramento's injury list, and they have Kevin Huter still out. He's out for the remainder of the year, though, with a shoulder injury. And they're saying sixth man of the year candidate Malik Monk is expected to be sidelined due to a knee issue. So that's good news for the Pelicans.
Yeah, because if you're looking at the Kings, once again, they don't play defense. They have really good offensive pieces like De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis. Malik Monk, as you mentioned, is sixth man of the year candidate. But they don't play defense. So without a couple pieces like Huter and Monk, like, it puts a little bit more pressure on them to play better defense, and the Pelicans just got to have a really nice shooting night tonight.
Well, want to go to Jazz Fest, folks? WWL's got a pair of tickets for you with your name on it. See amazing artists like Chris Stapleton, the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, the Revivalists, the Killers, Heart, Rockin' Doopsie, goes on and on. Winning's easy. Just register now at WWL.com/contest to win a pair of tickets to the first weekend of Jazz Fest. Plus, there's a little extra in there. You get a Jazz Fest Express shuttle passes from Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller Lite, like Miller Time, and WWL. And we can even have a link that to the contest on our front page. Just go to WWL.com. It'll help you right there. We're going to take a break, step away, and be right back to close out the 6 o'clock hour right here on Sports Talk after this on WWL. Wrapping up the 6 o'clock hour of Sports Talk, looking up at the Masters leaderboard. Haven't gotten to watch much of it today. I know some of the action was pushed back due to weather issues over there. DeChambeau still in the lead for right now, -7. He's finished for the day. And right behind him, another American, and Scottie Scheffler. Tiger Woods playing right now. He has shot a 1 under par through 12 and is sitting at 17th right now in the standings. How are you feeling about Tiger Woods going into this, the Masters right now? He's definitely been a shell of himself of late, but I guess you can never doubt what he's capable of doing. We've seen the greatness come out before when it was least expected.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's been 5 years since he won the last Masters.
It doesn't seem like it. Yeah,
it feels like it was, maybe a couple years ago, but it's been 5 years since he won that 2019 Masters, which is crazy to think about. Steve, we were just talking with Joe Healy, and we mentioned that Tennessee and Georgia were tied atop the SEC with home runs. No longer. Charlie Condon hit his 22nd home run for the Georgia Bulldogs, so they have broken that tie. They now have 90 home runs on the season. So Tennessee, you're a number two, and hopefully you stay a number two based off of what's going to happen this weekend.
What's the score on that Georgia game right now?
It is currently 1-1 against Mizzou in Georgia right now. Georgia obviously off to a pretty solid start, 25-8 overall, but 5-7 in conference play. Mizzou coming off that surprising sweep against Florida, 4-8 in conference play, 15-19 overall. This is who LSU will be playing next weekend, so I'm getting kind of a little bit of an early scouting report here.
Also seeing Kentucky up 2-0 right now at Auburn. That's the top of the second inning. Coming back, we'll get into more Pelicans talk right here on WWL. Stay tuned after the news break.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.